This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
What Chesapeake is appearing to do is abide by the written terms of their contract, but really aggressively interpret that contract in a lawyerly way, trying to figure out what their maximum wiggle room is to take advantage of the other party on those contracts.
Imagine how you'd feel if instead of paying you the usual $5,000 a month, your employer suddenly whittled your paycheck down to $500 a month in order to pay for your boss's new private jet. Well, that's pretty much how thousands of landowners who lease their land to natural gas giant Chesapeake Energy feel right about now. When we think of the downside of the natural gas boom in this country, we usually think of the potential of environmental harm. But as residents in places like Pennsylvania and West Virginia are discovering, financial hazards lay in the weeds as well. This week's guest on Sea Change Radio, award-winning journalist Abram Lustgarten of ProPublica, discusses his recent investigation that has exposed alleged mass-scale financial wrongdoing by Chesapeake Energy, one of the nation's biggest oil and gas companies. Lustgarten will explain how sometimes when you make a deal with the devil, you get burned. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by Abram Lustgarten. He's a journalist for ProPublica and writes about energy, water, climate change, and has also written for Wired, Salon, Esquire, The Washington Post, New York Times, and did some terrific reporting on the BP and Deepwater Horizon tragedy. Abram, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
So your latest piece on ProPublica is about Chesapeake Energy. It's entitled Chesapeake Energy's $5 billion shuffle. First, for our listeners, why don't you tell us what Chesapeake Energy is?
Chesapeake Energy is the second largest driller and producer of natural gas in the United States. So to the extent that the fracking controversy or the big drilling booms that are sweeping across the country from Pennsylvania to North Dakota, Texas, Louisiana, to the extent big oil companies, big energy companies are pushing that that development, Chesapeake's one of the largest players pushing new gas drilling across the country and one of the largest users of the fracking technique to extract new natural gas deposits.
We always hear about the natural gas boom, and we think of this profligate spending period, but the price of natural gas has fluctuated quite a bit, and this was reflected in Chesapeake's balance sheets. And is this where they started to encounter problems?
Well, Chesapeake's kind of had a variety of problems for many, many years, but they haven't always affected landowners or the people that the company is partnered with to drill for natural gas. But they've had internal scandals, leadership of their chief executive taking too much compensation, having sort of conflicts of interest within the company, and the company's done some or been alleged to have engaged in some anti-competitive practices and things like that. But all that's, so it's got a muddy history, but all that's a little bit of an aside to what we're starting to see now, which is an effort to recoup huge amounts of money from the people like farmers in upstate Pennsylvania and other landowners across the country who expect to benefit and be compensated for the drilling of natural gas on their property.
Why don't you give us an executive summary of some of the findings of your research and your work that's connected to this piece?
Sure. And just for a quick background, I started covering natural gas or the fracking issue in 2008. We broke kind of the first stories to raise questions about the environmental impacts of fracking. And for a long time, we looked at water contaminants and some of the geological questions and so forth. And throughout that conversation, those investigations, we published something like 100 stories about it. The argument has always been that in exchange for perhaps these environmental compromises or environmental impacts, at least there is an economic stimulus. There's money flowing into communities across the country that are in great need of, maybe they rely on farming, maybe they are just upstate towns that don't have a really strong economy, and the money that was supposed to come from drilling for their share of the natural gas is supposed to be this huge shared wealth. Everybody's got a stake in this game, and this will benefit local communities. And so what we found in this story is that these local communities are not seeing the kind of benefits that they expected and that they were promised. And in the case of Chesapeake Energy, they're not seeing that money because Chesapeake basically came up with a strategy to save itself at the expense of farmers. It constructed a bunch of very complicated financial deals with Wall Street investors and other Wall Street listed companies to essentially take money from farmers and use it to pay off their own debts and keep their company afloat.
We hear about these tremendously successful companies. I mean, this Aubrey McClendon is this almost Wolf of Wall Street-like character. He's almost bigger than life. And some of the stuff you outline in the piece is pretty remarkable. Just somebody selling his antique map collection back to the company for $12 million. You know, these kind of things don't sound like they'd happen at most people's companies. But so how does a company that has so much cash coming in get in so much trouble?
Well, Chesapeake did a bunch of things over the years. And like you said, it was led by this guy, Aubrey McClendon. He's an ambitious, aggressive, very cunning businessman who, by all accounts, really likes to live large. And so he, from the beginning, put Chesapeake in a position of having a great amount of debt. So for example, in addition to all the scandalous things that I write about, Chesapeake went out and bought up rights and signed contracts with landowners across the country on a massive scale. It basically borrowed a whole bunch of money to get access to those lands by promising landowners that they'd get a share of the profits. And it did that at a faster pace than its business could support it. In the meantime, in their Oklahoma City headquarters, they built new office buildings, they built fancy restaurants and fancy gyms, and like you mentioned, sold antique map collections and issued $75 million bonus packages to their executives and things like that. And the bottom line is, after some years, the company wasn't yet drilling enough wells to produce enough gas to pay for its debt.
They were paying the market price for gas, but there was a little loophole in there about the expenses. And these were a gray part of the contract with the landowners, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. So like the Cliff Notes version of how gas drilling works is, a company signs a contract with a landowner. It says, I'll drill on your land and you'll get a percentage of the proceeds from that drilling. And 12.5% is the common kind of baseline number. So the gas gets drilled. The company is supposed to pay the costs for actually putting a well there and drilling the gas. But often the company will share the costs with a landowner for transporting that gas off to market. So once the gas comes up out of a well, it goes into a small set of pipelines that are owned by a company like Chesapeake and gets piped off maybe 30 miles or 50 miles off to a big interstate pipeline. And then the big interstate pipeline carries it off to a city where that gas is sold onto the national markets and the sales price is determined. The big pipelines are regulated. The federal government has the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission that, among lots of other things, sets price limits so that the pipeline companies, the oil companies, can't rip each other off and can't rip landowners off. The small set of pipelines, however, are not regulated. They mostly lie within state boundaries. They don't cross state boundaries. They're very small systems that there's some safety regulatory oversight, but no real price control oversight. And it appears that Chesapeake saw that as an opportunity to essentially jack up the prices that they charged or that they passed on for using these small pipelines and claim that it was an expense. And because they're supposed to share some of the expenses with landowners, they got landowners to foot the bill.
This is not just like shaving a few cents on your cable bill or something. These are farmers or landowners who who were getting, in your example, $5,000 a month, and then all of a sudden they're getting $500 a month.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, I worked with a couple individuals in upstate Pennsylvania, and one of them was a farmer named Joe Drake. He used to run a dairy farm, and then the dairy farm wasn't supporting him, and he turned to allowing gas drilling on his property. And the first couple months, everything looked great. He got a check for almost $60,000 after the first couple of months of production. In July of 2012, his first check was for $5,000-something. And by January, February of 2013, which is right after Chesapeake closed these complex deals that I'm describing, that same check for the same amount of gas dropped to about $500. Now, he and other residents in the area have since had checks for much smaller than that, for $50 or $75. Some of them have even gotten a bill where the company has said, you know, your expenses for the month exceeded the value of the gas, and so we'd like you to give us a couple $100.
And Drake's brother, I think you said, had like 94% of their gas income withheld.
Yeah, his brother-in-law, who just lives a short distance away on the same network of gathering pipelines, is presently losing just about all of his drilling income.
Time you see me, things won't be the same. Next time you see me, things won't be about the same.
To listen to Sea Change Radio anytime, anyplace, just subscribe to our free podcast. Simply follow the link from seachangeradio.com or search for us in the iTunes podcast directory.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Abram Lustgarten. He's a journalist for ProPublica. Can we compare apples to apples in terms of the unit cost of transporting gas? Chesapeake told us investors, I'm reading from your article here, that it had cost the company more than $8 to transport a cubic foot of gas or its oil equivalent, an astronomical amount unheard of in the energy industry. So what are more typical costs for transporting a cubic foot of gas?
Typical costs are hard to pinpoint because many of these companies don't have to report that number. But what I essentially learned through my reporting is that 75 cents, a dollar, is not that uncommon. I was able to tell from financial reporting submitted to both the Securities and Exchange Commission and to the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission that, you know, the big interstate pipeline that I looked at, it costs about 38 cents to transport their gas on average. One of the companies I was looking at, Access Midstream Partners, does report its costs in a regional basis, and they say their cost of operating in Pennsylvania's Marcellus Shale is about 9 cents to move a unit of natural gas. So when you compare something like Chesapeake's $8 to that, you can see this extraordinary markup. Now, it's complicated because Chesapeake mixes a whole bunch of things into that number, and they refuse to explain to me how it breaks down. So, you know, that number represents their transportation, the processing of the gas in that transportation pipeline, and, you know, and some fees that they attach for marketing and selling that gas as well. But gathering, meaning moving it, is supposed to be the bulk of that charge.
This complexity that you speak of is really the root of the problem in many ways, and that's probably keeps you up at night and working very hard to try to break down these very spaghetti-like connections with all the different companies and holding companies.
Absolutely.
There's one, I forget who this is in your piece, but he mentions there's it's basically the natural gas industry is a low-risk business model for companies that most people just don't understand.
Well, that quote is from the chief executive officer of the company that entered into these questionable deals with Chesapeake. And what they basically did is they gave Chesapeake a whole bunch of money and they bought Chesapeake's pipelines. So they took title the same way you'd buy or sell a house. You know, they took title to the pipelines themselves. But then they charged Chesapeake a whole bunch of money, more than market rates, to rent back the use of that pipeline, just like if you sold a house but then rented it to the person that sold it to you. And so the money that this company gave to Chesapeake, Chesapeake essentially paid back. And it paid it back through the form of things that count as expenses, which meant that they could pass them on to the farmers, and the farmers would pay those expenses. And so what you're referring to is the CEO of the company that bought the pipelines basically saying, our contracts guarantee us a whole bunch of money every single year for the next 10 or 20 years. It's a very simple business plan that most people don't understand because we can't fail. That's my paraphrasing version of what he was trying to say.
And this is just in his part of the business. But in general, I mean, Chesapeake is this very large company, and I don't think most people out of Oklahoma City or who are not closely related to the natural gas industry know about it. And so we just hear about this very ephemeral natural gas boom, but there's a lot of nuts and bolts in there, and the devil is in the details, it seems.
The devil's always in the details, whether you're talking about the environmental problems or regulatory oversight, or in this case, the finances. You know, the details are so particular, in fact, that you know, we can't really generalize even across the industry, except to say that lots of companies have had similar problems. But, you know, in this case, it was just diving very deeply into what public information is available about Chesapeake Energy's financial reporting and their income that at least shed a little bit of light onto what's happening in Pennsylvania.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Abram Lustgarten. He's a journalist for ProPublica. Abram, these inflated expenses are really not unique to Chesapeake, though, right? This is, you had mentioned how Kinder Morgan and Chevron and other companies in the natural gas industry are being investigated for similar rate issues, correct?
Yeah, correct. Similar but different. There are longstanding and numerous disputes over how landowners get paid for the share of oil or gas produced on their property. And all those cases are evidence of that. It seems common that companies like Chevron, like Kinder Morgan, are accused at one time or another, and many have settled or had judgments against them for misrepresenting their expenses, basically overcharging landowners, withholding too much money. What appears to be different about Chesapeake is both the way that they did it, the mechanism through these complex Wall Street deals. I've never seen anything like that before, and most of the people I talked to had never heard of anything or even really conceived of anything like that. And secondly, the sheer amount of money. You know, when I look at court cases across Texas or Oklahoma, it's often a landowner complaining that they're paying 5% too much or even 20% too much. But to see these farmers in the nation's hottest drilling area working with Chesapeake Energy and losing 94% of their paychecks, or in some cases much higher than that now, that's extraordinary. I've never seen an example like that.
So what kind of recourse do these landowners have? Are there regulations in place that can insulate them from this, or are they pretty much up the creek?
There are some regulations to protect some landowners, depending on which state you're in. And then after that, it depends on the contracts that they signed originally. And that also varies to a great degree. The people that I worked closely with for this story in Pennsylvania are a little more disadvantaged than most. And Pennsylvania does not have very many laws to protect their interests at all. They do have a state law that's supposed to guarantee them a minimal share of the royalties, 12.5%. But there are loopholes with that, the interpretation of that law. And secondly, they sign contracts that don't necessarily represent their best interests. So, for example, the subject of my story, Joe Drake, he's prohibited from suing Chesapeake Energy. He agreed to an arbitration clause, which basically means he can't sue Chesapeake, he can't join a class action lawsuit against Chesapeake, and he needs to hire a bunch of lawyers and sit down in a room and negotiate a settlement with Chesapeake. And that's a process that, big corporations might be able to undertake, but most individuals can't. It would cost Joe Drake himself tens of thousands of dollars to seek arbitration.
And to find a truly neutral arbiter in these cases is pretty laughable.
Absolutely.
Are there any kind of regulations in place limiting these type of contracts that a Joe Drake has signed?
Yeah, you know, I'm not an expert in all of the state regulations. They vary from place to place.
But it's on a state level then.
It's on a state level, yeah. And you know, I haven't heard of regulations that affect the contracts themselves. But for example, Oklahoma has you know, some very protective laws for landowners that essentially say, you know, and I could get this slightly wrong, but it's something along the lines of, you know, if a company is found to have underpaid in their royalties, so if a landowner goes through that arbitration or that court process and they win, then the penalties are very severe. So the state's enacted rules that are supposed to dissuade companies from breaking the rules. They have very high punitive damages. They have a very long statute of limitations, and they basically bring the hammer down on companies that are caught cheating on royalties.
Lying, cheating, hurting, that's all you seem to do. Messing around every guy in town, putting me down for thinking of someone new. Always the same, playing your game, drive me insane. Trouble's gonna come to you. One of these days, and it won't.
Follow the shift to sustainability with Sea Change Radio on Twitter at twitter.com/seachangeradio and on our Facebook page.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio. I'm speaking to Abram Lustgarten. He's a journalist for ProPublica. Abram, you talk about how Chesapeake benefited from tax breaks, but could you give some examples?
The quick and dirty is that Chesapeake, like a lot of energy companies, is using a corporate structure called a master limited partnership. And it's a type of business structure that the U.S. federal government allows mostly for energy companies and for a few other like resource mining companies, things like that. And it was originally meant in the 1980s when it was devised to encourage development and investment in these areas where, say, there wasn't a lot of impetus to go drill new gas wells or go dig a new copper mine. Today, of course, that's a robust business. They don't need federal subsidies, but the master limited partnership agreements essentially allow companies to pay far less, if any, income tax at all on their earnings. So it's a way of kind of laundering income, passing it through a couple other entities and avoiding paying income tax.
And that probably gets a lot easier as you get larger and more vertically integrated, I would imagine.
Yeah, absolutely. Some of these limited partnerships become publicly traded companies. They get huge. They sell their stock, you know, on Wall Street, and you or I could invest in them.
Can you talk about the vertical integration of the industry?
Sure. You know, Chesapeake devised a business plan where they would have a stake in pretty much every single part of the process. So not just that they go out and drill wells and produce gas, but then they own the pipeline that transports that gas, and then they own the processing center that the pipeline leads into that treats that gas, and then they own the marketing company that handles the final sale of that gas. They have subsidiaries that run trucking. They have subsidiaries that build pipelines. They have subsidiaries that do the fracking. And what it essentially means is, while there's a long chain of activities that you know, that go into producing natural gas, Chesapeake's profiting from each and every one of those steps.
So we talked about how the small guy is pretty much at the whim of whether he or she signed an arbitration agreement and the state regulations. But let's talk about the impact that your work could have on a Chesapeake Energy. Are there regulations in place that could put people behind bars for basically stealing and lying to their customers?
Well, I can't answer that with certainty. I would like to see some changes result from my articles. The governor of Pennsylvania has contacted his attorney general and called for an investigation into Chesapeake Energy. It remains to be seen whether there is any crime in how they have represented their business to landowners like Joe Drake. It may just be that they are, that they have enough leverage and power that they can be a bully and that the law doesn't keep them from doing that. The other substantial question has to do with the Securities and Exchange Commission and what information public companies like Chesapeake Energy are required to report to the federal government. So what my story was essentially finding is that Chesapeake has very large amounts of debts, many billions of dollars, that it does not report to its shareholders as debt or that it had not reported until very, very recently. I think that securities regulators are going to be looking at that, trying to figure out if their prior disclosure was sufficient or if indeed, they had great debts that they should have been reporting and that they were calling something else. It really becomes a semantic argument. Chesapeake calls them long-term contracts, but by all accounts, it's money that they have to repay in exchange for money they received.
Well, I can't imagine a company with having a 72,000 square foot gym would have any debt.
Well, they borrowed a lot of money to build that 72,000 square foot gym, apparently.
So essentially, the company was lying about the expenses being negligible when they entered these agreements. So they basically changed the rules after they entered into a contractual agreement with their landowners. But isn't that really the essence of a contract, is that we're paying you X amount, but I guess they found a loophole where they could just change the price on the fees, that these little hidden fees became that thing that you look on your phone bill gone haywire.
Right. Most of the contracts I've looked at, and I've looked at many hundreds of them at this point, they don't specify exactly what the fees can be. Often they don't even specify exactly what share of the fees can be passed on. So what you have is a mixture of a company like Chesapeake really taking advantage of their position. And then also a bit of naivety on the part of landowners, to be honest. There's very clearly, if some landowners had approached their contracts and their legal agreements a little more carefully, they might have protected themselves better. So what you see is, salesmanship, a very slick salesmanship where they offer a contract that says one thing and then sort of verbally on the spot and with a handshake, they say, well, this contract is really good for you. You're going to make a lot of money. And oh, don't worry about that line that says we can share expenses. The expenses really don't usually amount to much. So when Joe Drake says Chesapeake lied to him, I haven't seen anything that makes that an enforceable, legal breach. What Chesapeake is appearing to do is abide by the written terms of their contract, but really aggressively interpret that contract in a lawyerly way, trying to figure out what their maximum wiggle room is to take advantage of the other party on those contracts.
And the other party in this case is just a guy who doesn't have a well-heeled, expensive legal team behind him.
Absolutely. Yep.
I mean, we all enter many contracts with the companies that we do business with, whether we're aware of it or not. If you watch TV, if you use a telephone, if you have gas and water delivered to your home, you have a contract with these companies. And there's just so much small print that somebody can read in this world as a consumer.
Yep, absolutely. And if there's any lesson to this whole scenario that's actually controllable, by individual people, by landowners, it's to take your time, hire a lawyer, pay that extra couple thousand dollars, even if it seems like an exorbitant expense, to have, your contracts reviewed and to really know what you're getting into.
Well, it's really a pleasure. For those who think that journalism is a thing of the past and it's not important, it's good to see the work that you do is really reminding us that the Fourth Estate is alive and well and that it's an important fourth branch of the government in many ways. So I wanted to thank you for a lot of the work you've done.
Oh, sure. Thanks for your interest.
He's a journalist for ProPublica, Abram Lustgarten. His latest piece is Chesapeake Energy's $5 billion shuffle. We'll link to it at Sea Change Radio, and it's terrific work. Abram, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thanks for having me on.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Wayne Shorter, The Grateful Dead, and Led Zeppelin. Sea Change Radio is made possible by support from Presidio Graduate School in San Francisco, offering MBA and MPA degrees in sustainable management. Learn more at presidioedu.org.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.